today on Rockin' the Suburbs.
Now we'll turn the record over.
Yeah, let's go ahead and do that.
All right, I joke because, you know, we're not actually doing that. It's a sequence of 12 songs here, but it does kind of feel like this is side two when I hear Wasted. It feels like it's the lead, you know, the side two, track one kind of a song, right?
Oh, yeah.
So Wasted, the thing I loved here is I love the build. You know, the build, it's incredible. And that intensity that you achieve on this one. Yeah, I mean, this is really something.
Another one of our favorite songs to play. This one started again as a demo that I had a while ago. And it was one of the first ones that we actually finished, unlike Something for Nothing. But we brought it in.
Devin, let me ask you real quick, since you've mentioned demos a couple of times, what constitutes a demo like for this? Was it just you and guitar? Or are you doing a couple things that the band would hear first, or how? Yeah. What would that consist of?
It totally depends on the track. Some of the songs are more fleshed out. I'll get it into Reaper on my little two plug interface and record guitar, bass, and lead for some of them. Some of them will just be a phone demo that I just do on an acoustic. You know, it totally depends. But typically, you know, we'll be sending demos all the time, whether it's a riff or an entire verse or chorus. And then we get into the studio together and kind of just, if we're all, you know, all hands on deck, then we got a song. So, that's what this one was. I had written the rhythm and the lead and just the root note bass for it. And then we had finished it, I think, in two sessions. I think we had just a couple of sessions together, and that's my favorite thing about working with these guys is, you know, if we have even the slightest bit of an idea for a song, it's gonna get finished in one or two sessions, just because above, you know, all the individual, you know, musicianship, I think we're all really good songwriters together. Like, our brains work that way together. So it's a lot of fun. So that was the process for this one.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Okay. So again, let's talk again about the sequencing. I mean, was it important to sort of place this song coming off of those two slower songs? Did you think about it that way?
Yeah, absolutely. It felt like a good place to get the energy up again, because I think the whole album, most of our live sets are pretty loud, pretty rock and roll in terms of the songs that we choose to put in them. And I really wanted to showcase a little bit of the softer side for this album, because that's something that we don't get to do a whole lot live. We typically choose to play a lot of the heavier songs, the louder songs, because those end up being the most fun to play. And we play with a lot of rock bands or punk bands or, you know, progressive bands. So,
right.
You know, to to bring the vibe down is not so much fun when we're playing loud rock shows. But yeah, that was a huge thing. Is it, we wanted to feel like a story or a journey or just an album. So that was a big one. I think this one was a good entrance, because just like you said, Jim, it starts quiet and it builds towards the end and leads you into the rest of the album. So
yeah,
that was big for us. We love that build throughout the entire song.
Yeah, totally hear that. Okay. All right, track 8 is Let You Down.
Yeah.
Patrick, you have a thought about that?
Yeah, we do. Oh, Patrick?
No, I was going to say it very much doesn't.
Tough one, because Brad actually wrote the entirety of this song. So yeah, this one was their baby, and wanted it on the album, and we were having a fun time jamming it. So we put our little sauce on there, but Brad pretty much wrote every part. I think, you know, Matt can say, I think had a few things on bass, but this was a finished song when Brad brought it to us. So yeah.
I do like the bass playing on this one, kind of underneath and kind of weaving around. I don't know, to me, a lot of times, because I still occasionally make music in a trio, and there's not a whole lot of options sometimes for the bass to go off and be more melodic, whereas, you know, I've got to be there for the drummer because the guitar player is doing something different too. So I think that's interesting on this one. This is the one that, And maybe you hit the nail on the head. I suddenly thought to myself, wait a minute, this is kind of a little bit of a left turn. And the question that formed in my mind was, and you know, you've mentioned been doing this for a period of time, a couple of years to put all this together. How much is the music that you're currently listening to affecting what you're doing when you're actually making a record? Like you said, we're putting our sauce on this, but is it, oh, I just heard this, you know, track by Mdou Mokhtar, and now I want to do a little Mdou Mokhtar thing, or like, how does that affect, you know, the overdubs and anything you put on it?
Oh, too much. we have to really, or at least I do, I have to really temper what I'm into, because if I didn't, then it would just be a mess of different genres and songs. Yeah, I think, you know, there's actually a lot of the tracks on here inspired by Queens of the Stone Age type riffs, heavier. That's when we decided to do a couple of them in a lower tuning. So, you know, we're just having fun with it in that hard rock style. But yeah, I mean, that's tough for us. Or at least it is for me, because I just get so into what I'm listening to. But, you know, we have a distinct sound, and we've been playing together long enough now that we kind of know what to expect, not in a boring way, but just like we know how we operate, and we know the general vibe we're going for. So it's a little bit easier to rein it in, and not just willy-nilly write, you know, a thrash song or something. So, yeah, it's gotten easier as we've been together longer.
Okay, so where are we here? Oh yeah, this song.
It's a family thing.
Yeah.
Tell us the title of track number 9.
Track number 9 is Fuck You Cowboy. I think this was exactly what I was just saying. This was in the dead heat of us, or at least me, just listening to some rock and roll. It's like four chords, it's, you know, E minor, G, C, A. It's just very easy. We wanted to have a song that just starts off coming at you and stays that way the whole time. And that's what this one was. The lyrics, more so about growing up in Mississippi, and this one, you know, has a little bit more to do with, at the time, it's a little bit more serious, but at the time there was some sort of mass shooting going on. And I think this song is definitely more charged in terms of, you know, gun culture and just the general culture of not caring or having enough empathy for other people. And it's not a direct statement, you know, to any sort of group or a culture, but I think I was just tired. And it's not saying fuck you to cowboys. It's saying I am a fuck you cowboy. And it's a little bit of a statement, but more so just kind of a cry, just in the state of where we are in the country. So this one definitely, while it sounds fun, it's more of a reflection on the state of things.
Okay. Yeah. All right. So a couple songs ago, Patrick mentioned the bass work on a song, and I want to specifically bring that up here with the song Paperweight. Tuesday.
As I breathe, no one can say, nobody can say, I.
Matt, how are you approaching the bass on this? Because it's pretty cool.
Thank you so much. Well, I use my general approach for bass, which is like, you know, I got to know what your instrument's doing. So trying to hold it down heavy, accompanying the guitar, gluing in together the vocals and staying with the drummer. But I do, for this tune, specifically remember writing that whole like ending breakdown together with the band. And we were just grooving really hard. And I was like, we should just like groove this out for like another 8 bars. And then that's the tune. And as far as like any inspiration, I mean, I'm just a big Motown head. I really like Paul McCartney and a lot of like the 70s rock and rollers, John Paul Jones, who else? Noel Redding. So just, yeah, diving deep into my pocket and in my inspirations as a bassist to write kind of the stuff that I do, and especially for that one.
That's great. That's great. So, Patrick mentioned earlier sort of finding the right space for the bass. Like, how do you approach that with, you know, playing with the three others?
Yeah, it's been interesting. I've had to learn because the rest of the guys are just so good. And I want them to be able to shine. I mean, as a bassist, you're supposed to stay in the pocket and make sure that the listener feels the groove and gets the beat of the song. But it's also a rock band. And like, I have deep influences that like, you can listen to those records and you hear and you can note some bass worthy tunes. So that's my goal. I always try to write like something as memorable as I can in the flavors that I like, while also keeping in mind that I'm writing a song and that I'm the bassist in a song. So knowing my pocket, staying there, and then venturing out when I can, and just I do study a lot of music theory and like music composition and music analysis. So there are moments where a bassist can go ahead and just split gack in the middle of a couple phrases and stuff. And I look for those when I can, but my main focus is making sure I'm writing a good song with good musicians and contributing where I can.
Got it.
Sometimes that's the best thing about a song though, right, Jim? You listen to a song for like 3 minutes and you'd be like, just wait for this one bass riff. Just if they only do it once, but it's like, that's the best part of this tune. I wish they did it more.
And this is one of the faster songs on the album too. So this must be a fun one to play live.
Oh, it is. I mean, it takes a minute, but we get there. We get there. I think if you don't know the song, if you're hearing it for the first time live, it starts off really slow and then just boom, we come at you, pick it up a little bit. And it is fun. I think this is one of our faves to play, because it's, I'd say it's just the most like blues rock and roll chords whenever that hits, with a little rundown also. So yeah, it's a lot of fun to play this one. We always want to try and write more like this, but maybe we'll get there one day.
Yeah, absolutely. And I want to ask, as we come to the next track, Tantrum, the penultimate track on the record, how many, and I, as we're recording this, everybody, for the listeners out there, this record has only been out for like a couple days, like literally just came out. And I'm starting to wrap my ears around it, but did you guys use primarily electric guitars on this record? Cause I know the intro to Tantrum at least feels like, oh, there might be an acoustic with some effects buried in there, or.
Time and time.
for the guitar nerds out there, for Mike Wagner, what were the actual guitars that you used on this record?
Mel and Matt, you want to talk about that a little bit? Studio action?
Yeah. A lot of the guitars are a combination of my SG. I think I used the Telecaster as well on Tantrum to kind of accentuate the lead lines, and it has a really nice, like, clean spank, as well as like maybe Something for Nothing and some other tunes like that. I think we also layered with Les Paul. So we try to layer different guitars, especially for the heavier tunes, to get that really fat tone. And then we just love using our Fender amps too at the studio. So also keeping that clean tone, the really bright in your face tone.
Yeah. But no acoustics. Keep those away.
Yeah, just really for an arrangement. Glad you came. We layered some acoustics, but no, Tantrum is just electric, a really clean electric with some effects on it.
Okay, cool. It's wonderful what you can do with electric effects these days, that's for sure.
Right, right. It's interesting. I guess this is a good time to talk about this too. And the last time we talked with you guys a couple of years ago, we mentioned sort of the 90s influence on the band. And I think when you're talking about guitars and those sort of occasional acoustic sounds, and then the, you know, sort of the more roaring kind of electric stuff, I think a lot of the Pixies, and I know that's a band that you guys really like, right?
Oh yeah. Just saw them. They were in Chicago.
Oh nice.
Yeah. It was great. We love Pixies. I'd have to say they're probably one of the biggest influences in terms of songwriting or sound.
Mm-hmm.
Just really quiet and explosive. I mean, it's a tale as old as time in terms of 90s influenced bands, but it's still I mean, I would, if anybody asks, I tell them we just sound, you know, like a 90s rock band. That's really what it is, the easiest way to put it, because genres get so mixed up and confused these days. So yeah, I mean, this one from top to bottom feels kind of like a love note or a love letter to all the 90s bands that grew up listening to. And I know there's a lot of other influences on it too. But in general sound and inspiration, it's definitely up there in the driving factor.
What's wrong with that? I love it.
Yeah, right? If you love it, just do it.
Yeah.
Makes great sense. Okay, and then we come to the closing track. And what I want to say about this here is the song is called Glad You Came. And I just think that's like the greatest song title for a song to end an album.
Sweet little cherry on top of the album, especially coming out of the, I would say, the heavier section, the last half of it. And there's a lot of meetings, but it's just gratitude. The song itself is about, you know, someone picking you up and saving you, or when you need them the most, they're reaching out. And to end the album on it, it's kind of breaking the fourth wall for listeners to, I mean, if they make it that far. And
right.
It also, it's a nice way to end the album. Nice little note, you know, sweet song. So to let you go, you know, so.
Yeah. To me, it's like, yeah, it felt to me, at least as a listener, totally speaking to me, like, you know, glad you experienced this with us. But
yeah,
this leads me to this question though, about modern listening habits. Do you know, so few people, it seems, actually listen to an album beginning to end anymore. Does that matter to you?
Well, it definitely does matter to me. It's unfortunate because I'm definitely one of those guys who listens to an album from top to bottom, you know, when many times throughout the week when I'm listening to whatever it is I am, I don't go, what song do I want to hear? Or what, you know, I think of an album because that's just how I'm feeling. And if I know the album or if I don't, you know, it's a new experience. And that's, you know, not to get old man on it, but it is a little bit unfortunate because that's something you see directly whenever you put out music. I mean, we've done EPs or what have you, but you can see it in the metrics, like the listens, you know, the people who actually get through an album that falls off drastically after three or four, if it's not catching them or if it's not hooky enough or, you know, so it definitely matters to us. But we didn't take it into account for the album because we want it to stand for itself. We didn't track list anything for people to, you know, for retention or, you know, analytics or anything like that. We just wanted to put out piece of work that we were proud of and had something to say from top to bottom. And if people listen to it that way, all the better. If not, then, you know, that take your pick. So it's definitely important to us. However, we don't take it into account when we're releasing stuff.
Great answer. Yeah. I mean, as I was saying earlier, at least to me, it feels like you guys have taken this step with the potential, at least that I saw when I saw you play for the first time and listen to your music for the first time. And you were speaking, Devin, too, about trying to keep everything under, you know, sort of in-house and under control. Where do you see, like, organically the next step? Where do you want this album to take you? You know, as Cutest Nuisance, whether that be just from an artistic point of view or from a, you know, point of view that it takes you on a cross country tour or takes you to Europe. Like, I don't know. Where do you kind of see, you know, that?
I mean, don't get me wrong. We'd love to go on a international tour. If anybody's got any connections, let us know. a van we could borrow.
Yeah. I know a guy in Sweden. That's about
yeah,
it.
Perfect. Perfect. I'll get his number after the
interview. Yeah, absolutely.
But yeah, I mean, I think we're still figuring it out ourselves. The biggest thing is we have really learned to put our all into this. And even in terms of the promotional aspects, I mean, I have recently got into videography and photography in the past few months. And that's one thing that I've noticed about, you know, bands in similar situations as us is, you know, the people who are going on tours, the people who are doing the dang thing are doing it themselves from top to bottom. And it's hard work. But we have had a lot of fun doing it. And I think, you know, with learning how this process goes and learning how we operate, we're going to figure it out in terms of what's next, but I know that something's clicked for us. So we're going to start playing some shows again, but more importantly, we're really working on getting ourselves in front of people, whether it's online or in person. And I think we have a much better understanding of what that looks like now than when we talked a couple of years ago. So
fantastic.
Yeah, interesting.
We're really excited.
I got a next step for you.
What's that?
You all are in Chicago, right?
Yeah.
You got to get a song in the next season of The Bear.
There you go. Yeah.
Great idea.
It just makes sense, right?
It does.
Yeah.
It does. Yeah. Oh, right. I love The Bear.
With the rise and flow of their songs and the conflicting emotions in that show, for sure.
Yeah. Good idea. Got some emails to send.
I'm sure they'll hear this and, you know, that'll just take care of itself, right? Okay. Okay, so the album is Happy Accident, and people can hear it on all the big streaming services, right?
That's correct.
But what you really want them to do is go to Bandcamp. You go to your Bandcamp page.
Bandcamp.
Listen to it there and maybe, you know, purchase the digital album, right?
That would be lovely.
Yeah. Is that the best place for people who are interested in Cutest Nuisance to go there? Your Facebook page? Where would you send people?
Instagram. That's definitely okay. our main platform of choice. And that's where we're the most active. But we upload and we post on pretty much all the social medias. We're working on getting our YouTube up and going, since that is we're working on a lot on videos. However, Instagram is where you could probably stay up to date and the most active. So that's where I'd say.
And I will note that is Cutest Nuisance Band, all one word. Instagram.com/CutestNuisanceBand. So check that out.
Great.
There may be a cat that has the Cutest Nuisance handle already on Instagram or something like that.
Yeah, definitely.
All right, great. Well, a great record. Thanks very much for hanging out with us here today. I think it's just been a pleasure getting to know you all and connecting with you and listening to your music.
Absolutely. Thanks, guys. Yeah, you're the best, man. We appreciate you guys.
All right, so listeners, go out and listen to Happy Accident by Cutest Nuisance. And if you're in the Chicago area, look for upcoming shows.
Yeah.
Check out their social media and look for upcoming shows. Go see them live, because it is a great experience to hear this band play.
Absolutely. And if you're a DJ on Suburbs Radio, play Cutest Nuisance new record on your show. I know we have a lot of listeners who have shows, so I'd love to hear them on the station too.
That's a great idea. Okay. All right, Devin, Melissa, Matt, thanks very much for hanging out
with us.
Thank
you guys so much.
Thanks for having us, guys. Sure. Keep on rocking the suburbs.
Wait for this one bass riff.